Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by Will Birchfield, filling in for Stoney, who abandoned us to go do some TV tonight. Good for him, right? I mean, anything to pick up a few extra bucks, right, Will?
Yeah, I mean, we're not making money here, so I'm just kidding.
That's a hint, guys. Let's get this thing sold. Look, I'm in Arizona. Will's at home. We both watched the same game this afternoon into this evening, and the Lions did what I think they needed to do. Will, they bounced back. This is a team that one of their many identities is resiliency. I think they did it in a pretty authoritative way, you know, smacking down the upstart Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a game where they got back to their roots offensively and especially from the start. I mean, I know we're going to break this thing down first that second half, but there was a clear emphasis, a deliberate intention early in this game to lean on their strength, which is obviously their offensive line. And I would argue David Montgomery, and they came out of the gates ready to run the ball, to move Arizona on the ground. And, you know, it wasn't always pretty. I think they're happy to have kind of uglied their way to a win, but it certainly seemed like Dan Campbell wanted to remind his players and maybe future opponents exactly how the Lions can and are willing to win a football game.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to credit Dan Campbell, but it's going to be down the board, right? It's Ben Johnson wanting to prove something. It's Scotty Montgomery, the running games coordinator, but not the running game coordinator. you know, and it's that offensive line, right? Like they did not play or perform at the level they wanted to, not just last week, but really to start the season. And so what do they do? Taylor Decker said that Ben Johnson told him, first run, you guys better get 4 yards because that's going to dictate the game plan. First play, 11 yards. And it just sent this whole thing going downhill like a landslide. And so Montgomery had 6 carries, 39 yards, punched it into the end zone on that first drive. They come back the second drive. Montgomery's on the bench. It's Gibbs' turn. And, you know, it's the beautiful thing about Jahmyr Gibbs, you think about him as kind of the sports car in the situation, but that dude will put the chains on the tires and hit it.
Yeah.
And 9 carries, most of them up the gut. Wasn't quite as efficient as Montgomery, but same thing. It was all about pound the rock, 15 carries, 2 drives, 2 touchdowns. I think most of those passes also went to tight ends because there were 3 of them on the field often at the time. Surprised Dan Skipper wasn't more involved in the passing game. And it really was incredible. I mean, this was a defense that couldn't stop the run last year, certainly looked better to start this year. They have all kinds of positive momentum and positive narratives going here. And like I said, I think that the Lions, not only did they need to feel good about themselves, but they needed to kind of put the Cardinals in their place and show them that the road is tough ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what? I felt guilty as soon as I finished my first response to you because this game was really won by the Lions defense. I mean, yes, there was obviously an impressive day for the rushing attack, but man, this was a banner day for Aaron Glenn's defense. And I would argue it's been a pretty impressive 3 weeks for Aaron Glenn's defense. And man, they were sticky today in coverage. They held James Conner, who ran for, I think, 150 plus last week, to 17 yards rushing. They completely bottled up Kyler Murray to the point that he looked like a pouty seventh grader by the end of that game.
I mean, I can relate to that.
The TV cameras had him multiple times, just shaking his head in frustration. He looked flummoxed by the end of that fourth quarter. And I know they had a chance, had they got the ball back, to have a game tying drive, but it never really felt like the offense of Arizona had much chance to get going. I was really impressed by the job that the Lions did defensively in all phases of that game. It's hard enough to stop Kyler's arm, then to worry about his legs, then to worry about James Conner. This has been a really good downhill, heavy personnel rushing game. Again, this is just 2 games of data we're going off of, but the way that this defense stepped up for the challenge without its leader, its captain, and maybe one of its best players, not Brian Branch or Aiden Hutchinson, but Alex Anzalone, was to me the story of the day. And I think that's, it's worth leading with off the top here.
Do we have enough listeners where the jokes are hitting now? We're coming back to the repetitive jokes. I wrote about it coming into the day, right? There's so much talk about Kyler Murray, rightfully so, having an unbelievable start to the season, can beat you with his legs, can beat you with his arm, had a phenomenal quarterback rating. Like, he's certainly not just all scrambles, right? Like, he's so much more than that. But I felt people were sleeping on Connor, right? Like, that's the offensive weapon that makes that thing go. And I was looking up some stats with Dan Miller of all people this week, and I stumbled upon one I didn't know, and I'm sure he used it in the broadcast. I hope he credited me for finding it. But James Connor led the NFL in average yards after contact last year, and it was not close. He almost averaged 4 yards per carry after contact. That means he's better than Theo Riddick during his career after contact. And that's I don't know, poor Theo. He had no idea he was going to catch a stray tonight, but
man, he had that nasty spin move though, didn't he?
Best angle route in the business. But I really wanted to see how the Lions would handle this north-south runner, this 233-pound bowling ball that just gets the momentum going against what we know and what we believe is an incredibly stout defensive front. And I labeled it the immovable object and the unstoppable force, because I felt like that's what was going to win. And that was James Conner's worst performance in a game since 2019. So we're talking 5 years that he's had that poor of a single game performance. It might even be worse in terms of yards per carry. I didn't get that deep into it, but the Lions completely shut him down. And Murray, even, like, look, did he have some runs? Yep. There were two in particular on one drive where he got the edge once he got Hutchinson cheating too far inside. I think the second one, Barnes probably got held. If it doesn't get a flag, you didn't get held.
Go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought.
They
lose Barnes in the middle of that game. They lose McNeil.
Didn't they lose?
Despite all of that attrition, I mean, we're talking about three critical cogs on defense, and Anzalone, McNeil, and Barnes. They just rose to the occasion. And, man, I don't think we can overstate how good this run defense has been now. Going back to last season, they haven't allowed a running back besides Christian McCaffrey in the NFC Championship to rush for 70 yards in a game since 2022. And when you're able to make a team essentially one-handed, and now you feel like you have the secondary, especially the outside corners, to match up with pass catchers, you can do really good things as a defense. Let's not forget how JV this Cardinals offense made opposing defenses look through two games, and the Lions flipped the script on them today. It felt like for the first time that the Cardinals didn't have any answers. And look, I know Arnold draws another pass interference, which is probably just expected. Now he's going to get a PI on a shot down the field.
This might have been the most egregious one too.
Probably on the first drive of each game. But he got better and better as that game went on. Carlton Davis, who again gave up some catches, but was solid. That duo in conjunction with this run defense is going to make it really hard for teams to figure out, like, entering a game, how do we want to attack the Lions? And I think a big piece for me, and I was talking about this with Anzalone maybe a week or so ago, he's talked a lot, and you've heard this, about he uses the term the defense is more squared away this year. And you know, it's kind of a vague term. What does it mean? And so I asked him, what do you mean by that? He says, when we step off the bus, I just know that we have playmakers at every level of the defense. And when I get out on the field, I can look behind me, I can look next to me, I can look in front of me, and I know that there are dudes around me that are going to help us play to our strengths. And he said in the past, it felt like Aaron Glenn mostly had to game plan to cover up their weaknesses on defense. For the first time, he's able to game plan to highlight their strengths. And he said, man, like, with no disrespect to my former teammates, that's a huge difference from years past, especially obviously 21-22.
Yeah, I want to go back to the trenches, right? Because that's where it always starts, and it's really started there with this defense. I was surprised to see you know, even though I knew they were playing well, I saw that PFF had them ranked number two defensive line heading into this game. And I can't imagine they hurt themselves with this performance. You know, something I picked up from a player in the locker room this week, because I asked, do you have to play more zone to defend Murray just because of the run threat? Do you need to make sure that the eyes across the board are more in the backfield? And he's like, well, I understand why you asked that, but like, historically, he struggles more with man coverage, so we want to make sure we get to man coverage. Well, you can't get to man coverage with him unless you trust the defensive line to do its job, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, he did get out for a couple big runs. That one was, I think, a 21-yarder on first or second and 20 that he converted. Great play by him. But other than that, you know, five carries for 45 yards. I thought they did a really good job with maintaining their rush lanes. There were several times where you could tell that he eyed a scramble and just didn't really have anywhere to go. And that allowed them to play man on the outside. And they got some plays too. Marvin Harrison, we've talked about this. He's going to be an exceptional player. There's like just the touchdown route he ran, the way he ran Davis into Branch was so advanced. He just does things for a younger player that he tells you how good he's going to be for years to come. But I thought the defensive line allowed them to play man coverage, and I think led to that frustration you talked about seeing during the broadcast with them, throwing the camera on Murray.
Yeah. Just a brief hat tip to Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, a dude is really, really freaking good when it doesn't look like he has to try to get open. Like the route that you're talking about on Davis, it looked like he was just kind of jogging that thing. But when you're cruising altitude speed is basically faster than everyone else's top speed, it's just so hard to handle. And then obviously he has all of the physical attributes. I mean, Aaron Glenn talking this week about, you know, he's bigger than his dad was and has all of the same movement skills and fluidity. Dude, that guy has, like, barring injury or freak setbacks, a Hall of Fame career ahead of him. I was amazed today just watching him. The simplicity of what he does, the ease with which he gets open against his proven veteran corner in Carlton Davis, blew me away. But, man, one of the biggest plays in that game that Carlton Davis made, the biggest, was against Murray on that scramble. He got to the sticks on that turnover on downs that Campbell eventually challenged, and he forces Murray out of bounds about a half yard shy of that first down. The Lions take over, and it felt like a huge swing in that game. And I know, obviously, a lot of the focus on Carlton Davis has been in coverage. It is why you bring in a cornerback. He has tackled really, really well over the first three games. That was another example of it. And in this coaching staff in particular loves corners who get up and get physical against the run. I know that was against a scrambling quarterback, but Carlton Davis, when you need him to, seems to make clutch plays. The fourth down breakup on Cooper Kupp he had in week one, the huge stop today on a scramble. I think you can count on him when the stakes rise.
Yeah, he's been, I think, everything they hoped with that acquisition, no doubt. It's funny when you were talking about Marvin Harrison's efficiency in his movements and how it looks like he's jogging. It just threw me back to high school track. By the way, I was never very fast. I was a field events guy, did pretty well in the pole vault. But I remember the fastest guy like in the area when I was a kid, Godfrey Herring was the guy's name. He ran for the Pontiac schools. And like, we all stopped to watch this guy run. And it was the same thing. It doesn't look he was gliding through his 200 meter and 400 meter splits. And I want to tie it to the Lions, because I think that's, if there's a leap for Jameson Williams to make going forward, like, I made the rabid greyhound reference before, and we talked to Randall L this week, and I asked his position coach, what do you think about, you know, Jameson's blocking? Cause it's getting all kinds of fun attention. He goes, I just wish he would stay under control. Like, we love the energy. Yeah. We love the enthusiasm, but he's just chaos. And that's the big separator for him. He has the speed. He has the length of a Marvin Harrison Jr. He doesn't have the fluidity of movement that guy has. And so if Jameson ever has these dreams, these ambitions of being this Hall of Fame caliber, all pro caliber receiver, which he does, I think that is going to be the logical step for him to take, is find a way to harness the efficiency of your movement. Before we skip ahead to the second half and take a little break here, I don't know how we haven't mentioned Jared Goff. First half, 12 for 12, perfect quarterback rating. And look, that everything about the way they played offense the first half set that up for Goff, right? It was about run. It opened up the play action, which is a big component of what he was doing. Something else that was taken away last week by the way Tampa Bay plays defense. And everything was clicking for him in the first half. Every single pass outside of the 2 minute warning pick six that wasn't, Jared Goff was on fire and you know, helped them to three touchdowns in four possessions to make that half what it was.
Yeah, we hear Aiden Hutchinson talk a lot about being in what he calls the flow state. It felt like Jared Goff achieved his flow state in the first half of that game. I think in the first couple of games, aside from some of the should have been or actually were intercepted balls, he just hasn't gone through his reads as smoothly as he has in years past, and he's missed some open targets. And I don't know if you had a different view of this than I did watching from above today at the game, but on TV, it didn't seem like to me he was missing anyone. It seemed like he was steadily progressing every time he dropped back and hitting the most logical target each time. And fortunately for the Lions, that was often Sam Laporta in the first half. And it felt like we saw more of the Laporta, obviously before he dings up his ankle, that we saw last year. And they did mention on the TV broadcast, it seemed like he had a broader route tree today than he had in the first two games. He was running some more of those corner routes, over routes, getting open further down the field, not just like those super shallow 5, 6, 7 yard crossers.
Yeah.
And Jared found him. And that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone because, man, like Jared Goff is such a timing oriented quarterback, and he throws to the players, the receivers that he can trust to be at spot X at Y time in the route. And St. Brown and Laporta are the two guys that he trusts most in that regard. And, I would guess, and we're just guessing that Laporta might be out a couple games, maybe just one, we'll see. But clearly the emphasis to get him the ball was on point today. And when Jared Goff is getting through his reads like that, it's a really crisp-looking passing attack.
Yeah, I think you know it helps when you're playing a defensive line that you trust your offensive line to handle a little better, I think. Yeah. You know, I do think Todd Bowles and his blitz heavy history was in their head from the game planning perspective last week with the quick passing, with the lack of play action. They just didn't want Goff turning his back and not being able to read what was coming at him. And they blitzed a lot. I didn't feel like it was. I think you know the mental component of it was more than the physical component last week, but they didn't have to worry about that this much this week, and I think that showed up. All right, we're gonna take a little break here and we will come back, talk about the second half. Offense disappeared, but the defense stayed on track in a big way, and we'll talk about a guy that we didn't talk about in the first half. Stick with us. This is the Detroit Football Network podcast. All right, we're back, and we kind of broke down the first half there, Will. And we're moving on to the second half. And there wasn't a lot of points. It was a lot like the 1 p.m. games today. I thought there was a lot of duds. Look, it was 4:25 and it was 1:25 locally. But I felt like I was waiting in the press box for this game to start for 7 hours. And only bad football games to watch. It was a little bit of a purgatory, I'm not going to lie. But in a way I described it in the game story, was this game started as a track meet and just slowed to a crawl. And there were no points. And I think some of that points are exciting, but there's an appreciation to be had for what this defense was able to accomplish. We talked about that a little bit already, but man, Kirby Joseph had himself a half, and I'm, one of those weeks where just kind of fortuitous, asked around quite a bit about Kirby Joseph, thought he had had a pretty crisp first 2 weeks of the season. And I think this might have been one of his best performances as a Lion. I know he had the two pick game against Aaron Rodgers. I know he had the big game against Minnesota, but like in terms of just doing everything right and making the big plays, like he is just playing at a different level than he has any stage of his career up to now.
Did you guys get a chance to talk to him post game, or was he absent as he tends to be?
Yeah, he's been a little bit difficult to corral this year. I did not get a chance to talk to him. a little disappointed because like he can be a little raw, but like he's got a good energy and he's always interesting when you do corner him.
Totally.
Yeah, like there's the whole hopping in the hot tub story at halftime last year that maybe was my favorite from 2023. Haven't been able to corner him, but it doesn't change.
Yeah, I struck out a couple times this week trying to track down Kirby in the locker room. He always claims that he has to go get treatment on his back. I think he just asks the Lions to put him on the injury report in week one with a back injury so that he has the built-in excuse to go get back treatment anytime someone comes to talk to him. But I agree, and I swear I'm not just saying this to serve my point. Playing alongside Brian Branch has really allowed Kirby to be that free-ranging, field-roaming, ball-hawking free safety that his traits are suited to. And, I think they have a really impressive duo back there right now. And this is without Melifonwu being on the field for the first three games, and that's going to be a one of those good problem to have dilemmas for Aaron Glenn whenever Melifonwu does get back, is finding a way to get him in this defense. Because man, I don't know how you justify taking Branch or Joseph off the field at all right now. They are everywhere. Branch again today, 9 tackles, 2 pass breakups. I know he left the game with what looked like maybe a shoulder injury when he came down hard on McBride. McBride, by the way, left the field almost crying, it looked like, on the broadcast, because he took such a licking from Brian Branch, who then on the sideline was basically barking at the Lions trainers to let him back in the game. They have two players in Joseph and Branch who are flat out gamers in the back end of that defense, and I think we're seeing them show up more and more.
So first of all, on the hit between Branch and McBride, helmet to helmet, McBride got tested for a concussion. I don't know if there was time for him to get cleared. We were told Branch was also in protocol after the game, and so turns out when you collide head to head, bad things happen. I know that both of them lowered their heads into that. Yeah, it's not great. We'll see where that takes him next week. The Lions do have that extra day of recovery leading into Seattle, so that's good. But I want to share something that, probably wasn't readily apparent when I went back and tried to watch the play on the broadcast copy, and that was Kirby's interception. Prior to that snap, the Lions were not ready. They were not set. Their defensive linemen were not set. There were dudes scrambling to get into position as the ball was snapped, and Kyler was trying to take advantage of that. And, I think he, even though, the scouting report is out there, he thought maybe this was the time he could get one by Kirby, because the defense on the whole was out of position. And it just makes the play that much more impressive, is that, Kirby was able to close that ground, and it was so obvious he was going to pick it, like when the ball was 12 yards downfield. And give Terry and Arnold some credit on that play too, because he popped Marvin Harrison. Really, the timing was phenomenal. Like just as the ball hit Kirby's hands, which makes it legal to hit the receiver, he took out the receiver, not allowing him to be a defender on the pass at that point, ensuring that his guy could catch the ball cleanly. So, big props to Arnold on that play, but it just continued from there for Kirby. You had the 3rd and 9 play deep in Arizona, deep in their own territory, where they ran a design run for Murray, and he got past the first layer in a hurry because that's what he does. Kirby saved it. stopped him at 8 yards, was too deep in their own territory outside of anybody, you know, other than Dan Campbell to attempt it, to go for that fourth down. So they forced a punt.
Yeah.
He and Branch converged on another third down deep ball to break it up. And yep. really, I think maybe the most impressive play for him, just because it's not the skill set we think of with Kirby, was the fourth down breakup where he had McBride one-on-one. And Trey McBride is a really good player. I mean, I would put him very close to Sam Laporta in terms of route running, production. He's just...
Yeah,
he's really, really good at this game of football. And Joseph did all the things right. He had a hand on the hip, you know, kind of like the old NBA hand checking, right? Which gives you a sense of which way that player's turning, when they're breaking. But he never hooked him. And so there was never restraint. Yeah. You didn't draw the pass interference. And when that ball arrived, he got his hand out in front and he knocked it down. And that was such a huge play, because at that point, the Lions were clinging to the lead. There was still... 8 minutes left. You convert that first down, now you're 40, 35 yard line, Lions territory. You're in Matt Prater's range, and you can knock it down to a one score game with 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes left. You know, that's I don't think you could undersell how big that moment was, and all the moments collectively were for Kirby Joseph.
Yeah. The other thing that's worth pointing out about Kirby Joseph is he does not fear contact. He relishes contact. I mean, and I know maybe that's misconstrued sometimes, that in dirty tackles, I know he has a tendency to go low over the middle, but this dude wants to lay the lumber. I mean, obviously he shows up in highlights for the plays he makes in coverage and the interceptions, and he came onto the scene with the, as you mentioned, the big game against Aaron Rodgers. But between Branch and Joseph, the Lions have two safeties who want to lay the wood. And, you know, if you continue to put that on tape, you're going to put opposing offenses on notice. I remember something that Jim O'Neill said about Kirby Joseph this offseason. Jim O'Neill is the Lions' new, essentially, safeties coach who was just hired. He said, Kirby Joseph makes a quarterback and receivers fear going over the middle.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you want in a free safety. You want that area of the field to be a dangerous place to go. Not because that player is dirty, but because he is always there ready to either make a play on the ball or make a play on the man as he's coming over. And I think that goes a long way in helping to eliminate the deep part of the field for this defense.
You know, and the thing about going low, it's really a size thing, right? Like, he's going low on tight ends who are 240 pounds. He's given up 50 pounds. Like, it sucks that there's some injuries that have occurred from that, but it's the same thing that happened to Derek Barnes today. You know, these are the NFL rules. These are things that are allowed. And it is up to the opponent to not put yourself in those positions for those plays to happen at some level, right? Like, Derek Barnes has to be aware that he's going to be cut block. And I know a lot of people thought it was dirty, but it's not dirty. That is a legal block in the NFL. And until they outlaw it, like, it's going to remain a legal block. And, you know, somebody pointed out a good point to me, like, you kind of need it for those times that an offensive lineman is running out on a cornerback, right? Like, when they're giving up 100 pounds, like, at some level you need to be able to go low to solve your problem in this league, just because of the mismatches it creates. And so it was unfortunate to see Derek Barnes go down. It was unfortunate to see TJ Hockenson and who's the Rams tight end, Higbee go down last year. Like, that, it always sucks, but that's just the nature of it. He makes you fear going across the middle for that reason, but he also makes you fear it because there are few players in this league that are capable of picking, you know, any pass within their two-car garage range, if you will.
Somebody tells me Kirby's got a four-car garage. My man's got some good wheels back at the crib.
You wait till he gets his – and, I mean, look, he's a next – contract conversation too, like,
definitely
it's gonna be next offseason, but like, you're talking about a guy that's gonna be going into his final year, and It's going to be an interesting discussion, because if we take Brad's history, Brad Holmes' history with the Rams, they didn't pay their safeties. But
yeah,
Brad Holmes hasn't done everything like his predecessor. You know, that he's not Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, where he's replicating the Patriot way and trying to pretend they're not. Like, Brad Holmes is his own man, and he does things his own way. And I you know, I think there's a good chance they pay Kirby. They're certainly going to pay Branch if you know, as long as he stays on.
I'm going to pay Branch.
Yeah. I think you should go the other way. I think
shell out the money to keep him here in Detroit.
I think you should be getting a cut as his great supporter.
Hey, can we talk about Jack Fox for a minute? I mean, it was a slog for the offense in the second half, clearly.
Yeah.
And every time Jack Fox came on the field, he was an asset. I know he had the one touchback. Besides that, I believe he had punts that pinned the offense at the 2, the 12, the 9, and the 6. I mean, he had a really, really good day. And it shouldn't be taken lightly, because, I mean, as we've discussed, the Lions didn't score points in the second half on the road. And they won that game because of their defense. And their defense was aided in a huge way by Jack Fox, or as we know him, a field position optimization specialist. He was at his very best today. When Campbell calls Jack Fox clutch, that's exactly what he's talking about. The ability to put his defense in spots to succeed.
Yeah, I've been kind of amazed by Jack Fox's entire career. Like, you go out to practice and like, you just see things that are different sometimes, and he's different than any punter that's ever been here. And Sam Martin was a really good putter, but
yeah,
Fox's leg is just different. And every once in a while during a practice, like, he just hits one that goes 70 yards. It's in the air for 5 seconds, and you're just like, damn. And I was talking to him actually this week. I stopped by his locker just to kind of touch base on the Prater history, right? Because basically accused Jack Fox of running Matt Prater out of town unintentionally as a young holder. But, you know, I did, you know, want to talk to him about his start, because it was before today that, like, Fox has been just killing the ball with a consistency that we haven't quite seen. And as kickers and punters often do, compared it to a golf swing, right? And he said that, like, or maybe a golf game in this case. And he's like, you know, it's always something different when you're on the course, right? Maybe your drive's not working as well as you like, or your putting's not as working as well as you like. And he said there's just these different elements where, like, you know, maybe something is just a little bit off. And he says, as I get older and as I experiment and tweak things, he goes, I'm much quicker to identify what went wrong and why it went wrong. And so consistency is coming more naturally to me. And I think it's showing. He obviously kicked too far on the 68 yarder to start the game, but
yeah, my God, he freaking put the freaking whole foot through that football.
But I mean, I know you hit on a little bit there, but 5 punts today inside or at the 12 yard line, including the last 3, all 3 of Arizona's fourth quarter possessions. And, absolutely huge. I mean, it's the name of the game in football right now, right? Like, don't give up the big plays. Make them drive the length of the field. And it is very, very difficult at this level to put together consistent 10, 12, 15-play drives. And that's what the Lions banked on. And they, you know, Arizona scored the only points of the half, but it was just a 3, you know, a field goal from Prater. And, you know, that was enough for them to survive.
Yeah, I wanted to make note of one other thing on the offensive side. We heard Ben Johnson this week for the first time, like, publicly challenge the offensive line to be better. And that's not something that we're accustomed to hearing in Detroit, where the offensive line has set the standard for the rest of the team for the better part of 3 seasons. But, you know, he was talking about Frank Ragnow asking him, you know, lean on me. We want to run the ball. Let us do what we do best. And Johnson telling Ragnow in response, like, I want to run the ball, but I need some production out of you guys. Well, they came through today. I think Montgomery and Gibbs had 39 combined carries for 190 yards, 189 yards. That's Detroit Lions football. I think we heard Campbell in the locker room after the game, basically saying, you know, that is our, that's who we are. That is the core foundation of the Detroit Lions. And there was no doubt that I think that the coaches wanted to allow the offensive line to feel itself again today. And I know in the second half, they weren't quite as efficient and probably some runs they want back. But if you can run the ball 39 times with this offense and this offensive line, instead of passing it 55 times like they did last week, you're gonna end up in a pretty good spot most weeks.
Yeah, it was just the right mix today, right? It was run early, run late when you needed the critical play. It was the Sam Laporta. It was the Amon-Ra St. Brown. The touchdown he had, like the route was really good, but the coverage was also really good. And Goff put it where only he could get it. You know, there was another play where it was third and long, and who steps up with the post pattern? It's Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's third and long at the end of that game, and they need to kill the clock. It's St. Brown again. And then there's a Jared Goff scramble, which we won't talk about. But
you know, I was asking my wife what she thought of the game, and she always zeroes in on Jared Goff and either wants him fired or extended after most games.
So she's like a 97.1 listener.
Yeah, she might be a frequent caller. And today she said, well, he had that one dumb throw, but then he had the really brave run.
The brave run.
Had that really cool, and then he also had that really cool touchdown play to St. Brown and Gibbs. And by the way, Laporta had a huge block.
Let's get her a segment on the podcast.
To spring it. You know, she can do the post game from now on. Since Stoney's unreliable, Kenzie is in next week for Stoney. But Laporta, a huge block on the hook and ladder play between St. Brown and Gibbs. But
got hurt for it.
Look, besides the one interception that Goff threw where the linebacker steps in front of that. That's a throw you shouldn't make. That was much more efficient Jared Goff operating today.
All right. I have a flight to catch, which is fun. So, I'm going to take the red high home. It's a really bad decision, but when you're paying for your own flights, you take the cheapest ones.
I hear you.
So we're going to take one more quick break here. And then we'll come back and take a really quick look ahead at what's next and, touch base on some of these injury issues coming out of this game because there were so many.
Yeah.
If they are a little bit longer term, you know, what does the replacement plan look like? So stick with us. We'll be back right after this break. All right, we're back from break, and we're going to take one quick look forward. Up next for the Lions is their arch nemesis, the Seattle Seahawks. And I don't know if the change in coach there is going to help, but the Lions just have not been able to get past that Seahawks hurdle. And that team is, you know, Pete Carroll or not, they are playing good football. They smashed the Dolphins today, and mind you, it's a Tua-less Dolphins, but still there's plenty of weapons there. So I'm looking forward to the game. You know, I Monday Night Football, two good teams. Should be really entertaining.
Yeah, and those jerseys should be a particular color next Monday night for the Lions. We'll see exactly what that looks like. We can't confirm or give anything away, but I think it's going to be a pretty raucous environment at Ford Field. Zach Charbonnet just keeps running the ball like a madman for the Seahawks, and I know they've been without Kenneth Walker, the Michigan State product, the past couple of weeks, but the Michigan then UCLA product, Zach Charbonnet, has been kind of a horse for them in the early going. And, you know, I think back to Dan Campbell has said a couple times in approach of this season that, you know, for all of the talk about the Lions being among the hunted now, like we have our own targets too. We've got teams that we've circled. And to me,
I thought you're talking about us.
Always one. To me, the Seahawks were always one that jumped out because he is well aware that they are 0-3 against Seattle. He is 0-3 against Seattle as Lions head coach. And they're going to be highly motivated. And that goes for Aaron Glenn. That goes for Ben Johnson. That goes for pretty much every player on this team that has been here through the duration of this build to get one back on Seattle on Monday night. The Seahawks came in here last year and rained on this team's and this town's parade after that big week one win in Kansas City. And CJ GJ had the blue ski masks going, and it felt like they were never going to lose again. The Seahawks came in and proved otherwise. I think the Lions are going to be ready to exact some revenge, I guess, on Monday night.
So we're going to test how many people listen this deep into this podcast. I know you hinted at it with an educated guess. I will break some news and confirm that the black jerseys are, are coming out next week for their debut. Been sitting on that for like a week. Was going to write a story, probably still will, because I also know the second game they're wearing them, and I will not.
Ooh, stick around for that.
Yeah, come back for that. It might be a little, story next week. Let's really touch on some of these injuries the Lions had today. It felt like there were a dozen. I don't know how many. I mean, it started with like Dan Skipper on the first drive. Levi Onwuzurike were in there. Terry and Arnold left, and those three guys all came back, and then they started getting a little bit more serious. And we touched on Derek Barnes earlier. He took a helmet directly to the knee, and that did not look great. Aleem, I'm not sure when it happened. He kind of collided on his pass rush with a teammate, and then he was kind of flung to the ground. But either way, suffered some kind of shoulder injury that was serious enough that it kept him out for the rest of the game. Laporta's ankle was barking, when he got rolled up on from behind. A colleague sitting next to me that insisted immediately it was a high ankle sprain, and just the behavior of Laporta through that contest kind of led me to believe that that might have been accurate. I would not be surprised if he it swells up tonight and tomorrow, and maybe he's not a go for Seattle. And then Branch, concussions are concussions. You don't know the timetable with stuff like that. And so, I guess I should say, I don't know he has a concussion. He's in protocol. So he could very much come out tomorrow and be fine. So I guess we'll take that one as it comes. But I think the interesting thing is how do you, if Derek Barnes and Aleem McNeil are longer term, and Campbell seemed pretty confident neither is season ending, but wasn't confident that neither one wasn't longer term, which to me says multiple games, how do you replace those guys? And Barnes is one I think we've been trying to figure out since training camp, because they tried with Mitchell Ogude, and they tried with James Houston, and they tried with Ukwu, and nobody really fit the Sam role quite as well as Barnes. And so it looked like today Ben Neiman was that guy. Ben Neiman had a really good training camp, really good preseason. Look, Barnes has 3 years in this defense and has really kind of been playing on expert mode this season. So I don't know what kind of upgrade that is. I don't know, or downgrade that is. I don't know what kind of adjustments that ripple through the entire linebacker room, but I think we might see a little bit more Jack Campbell here the next couple weeks.
Well, and if there was ever a time for James Houston to find his way on the field, shoot, maybe this is it. I mean, I know they kind of gave up on the Sam linebacker role.
Well, experiment, rightfully Houston, so.
But they, I get it. But we also heard Kelvin Shepard say last week that, we haven't fully given up on James Houston at the Sam role.
Yeah.
And think that he could play there for us. I don't believe these words as they're leaving my mouth. I'm mostly saying them to finish this segment. But I know people are always keen on James Houston. Hey, by the way, Brock Wright, career day today.
Oh, is that right?
Four catches, which ties a career high. Justin, can you name the only other game in which Brock Wright had four catches in his decorated receiving career? Nope. It was at Dallas in a 24-6 loss in the 2022 season.
Ooh, that was the Amaral leaving
the Jamal Williams fumble game.
Oh.
His first ever fumble, I think, in like 2.5-3 years or something.
Yeah, I was accused of jinxing that one, I think, by...
Oh, yeah, well, that'll happen. Anyways, and by the way, I am worried with Levi's injury that we now have a podcast injury jinx, so we can't have that trickle through the locker room. That's the last thing we need with this podcast.
We did have Barnes lined up, didn't we?
Why we did? God damn it.
Yeah, I'm not accepting that blame. With Aleem, as long as Levi is healthy and comes out of this game looking all right, I think you still have enough with defensive tackles. It'd be nice to
Wingo played another healthy load of snaps, it seemed like, today. Yeah. And I think they're feeling better and better about his contributions each week.
He moves so well. I mean, he's just got really good range. He dropped a running back or a screen pass from behind today. As long as he doesn't have to hold up against a double team in the run game, he's playing fine for a rookie. And so, look, you don't want to lose your best players, but it's just the nature of the game. And you're not alone, Detroit. Like, look at San Francisco right now. I don't know who they even played on offense. Certainly wasn't enough to stop the Stafford comeback train, but
look who the Rams are playing with. I mean, they are without their top two receivers. They're without a bunch of their offensive line, and hey, the Niners being 1-2 is a good piece of perspective on this season through 3 weeks. I mean, they're the best team in the NFC, right? And well, they lost to the Vikings last week, who were supposed to be the worst team in the NFC North, and the Vikings are 3-0 and just beat the Texans, who look like one of the best teams in the AFC. The NFL is as unpredictable and as up and down, as our buddy Woj likes to say, as ever. And this week felt like more evidence. And it's just another way of saying that while this game today for the Lions probably seemed like a gimme when the schedule came out way back when, it wasn't. And it didn't feel like it today entering the game, just based on the way the Cardinals have played offensively through two games. When you go on the road in the NFL and you win and hold a really good offense to 13 points, you're going to come home feeling really good about yourself.
Yeah, I think they should feel good about their defense right now. And, when we talk midweek next week, and I think that probably will end up being Thursday just based on the way the schedule is going to go. I want to talk about the NFC North because I'm fascinated by how it's shaking out. And you can talk about best divisions in football or whatever, but I would make a case without really looking at anything else, but this might be the best coached division.
Yeah.
Kevin
O'Connell's a stud, man.
And so is LaFleur. I mean, look what he's doing with Malik Willis. It is unbelievable. And it's year after year after year. Like, he seems to keep getting more on his talent. But like I said, we can talk about that in a few days.
Hey, do you think there's going to be QB controversy calls on Green Bay radio tomorrow, given how well Malik Willis has played here? Are there going to be fans calling for Malik Willis to get the Jordan Love extension?
I don't know enough.
The answer is yes.
I don't know enough about Green Bay radio, but yeah.
The answer is categorically yes.
Midwest fans are crazy. Before I sign us off, Will, since I did such a poor job last week, is there any last words you want before I get to the sign off?
That's a great question, and I will hit you with no. I'm all good.
Well, I had to because
I have truly nothing more to add.
You crushed my sign off twice last week, so I had to make sure. Look.
Oh wait!
All right,
no,
here it is.
Kidding. Nah. No, go ahead.
You know, we always want to say thank you to our producer Zach Clark because we have not had a smooth recording schedule yet in the first four episodes, and he's putting up with all of our BS with a level of patience that I do not know as a father of two children even. So, I'm glad he's sticking with us. This podcast, he will produce it. It will be up some point tonight, tomorrow. And as always, you can follow and listen to us. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app, or you can get it wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, all of it. I've said this before, we do a lot more than podcasts. We do a lot of writing, and you can find Will's work on 971theticket.com. You can find my work at detroitfootball.net. For Will, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Adios.